Welcome to Put Simply, the podcast that puts what's happening in the world simply without compromising on the details. Erdem Koç is my name, and it's wonderful to be back for the first episode of Season 2, 2025. Rodney McCune and Ozan Ibrahim are my co-hosts. Gentlemen, Happy New Year, if we can still say that. Almost the end of January and shaping up to be a big year. Wonderful to see you both. Let's start with the news of the month, I suppose, let alone the day or the week, and that is the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, the 47th president of the United States. Quite the spectacle over there in the Northern Hemisphere, and indeed, no doubt, something we'll be talking about here on Put Simply for quite some time. Ozan, I want to start with you. Let's start with some of your key observations and takeaway from the inauguration, which was unique in many ways.
Indeed, and Happy New Year to you. I read the other day somewhere that until the 14th of January, we can continue to say Happy New Year. But so, yes, we've been a bit slack so far this year. We haven't done any episodes, but let's have a good first episode. Indeed, it was a big day. I think what differed from the last inauguration we saw was that, there was a lot of adherence to norms. Obviously, it has to be said, that's largely because of Biden adhering to a lot of the norms around greeting, inviting Trump over and the First Lady Melania over for coffee with the First Lady Jill Biden. So there were some norms, but in true Trump style or form, there were also a lot of things that I suppose we're not used to seeing in inauguration before the Trump period. First and foremost, it was held inside the Capitol Hall, which I believe was the last time that was done was in 1985 when Ronald Reagan was re-elected for his second term. There's I think a lot of things can be said about where we are today. I think first and foremost, it's very telling that many of the people who were invited to the inauguration are going to be people, I suppose, who Trump considers to be in his inner circle. People like Zuckerberg, Meta, Jeff Bezos from Amazon, CEO of Google was there. Tim from his surname, Tim Cook from Apple. All of those tech billionaires were there. It was very interesting to see that, particularly considering that most of these people in the last 10 years have been extremely critical of Trump. But they were there, and I think there were two different speeches from Trump. One was following the prompter immediately after he got sworn in by the Chief Justice. And the second one was when he went to greet the fans who were in the kind of flow over area of Capitol Hill. Stark contrast between those two speeches. As I mentioned, the first one was he was following the prompter, and the second one was obviously a lot more in true Trump form. Very critical of the pardons. He made it very clear that the election in 2020 was stolen from him, that he was going to pardon, as he did a couple of hours later, those who were a part of an insurrection were a part of a very violent uprising against the government on January 6th of 2021. So yes, I think those two speeches were very different. Senator Marco Rubio has been confirmed. So, he's one thing you can give Trump is I think, he's hit the ground running. He's a lot more organized this time around during the transition. Last time around, I think it was in 2016-17, it was a bit of a mess. This time he's got a lot of his cabinet picks already in front of the Senate waiting to be confirmed. He's got one. I think he might have gotten two of them confirmed. He means business. I think some of those executive decisions that he's made, as executive orders, are showing that he means business. And I think that's frightening a few people, let's be very honest, because he has stuck to his word. He said he was going to do a lot of things to shake the country up, and he's definitely doing that.
You got to give him the fact that he is, you know, sticking to his promises, as you just said there, Ozan. I mean, so many of the things that he's ordered on day one through his powers as president and his ability to do executive orders, you know, if you pardoning the rioters from January 6 in just after the last election, you know, the attempts to delay the TikTok ban and give sort of TikTok a breath or an ability to breathe and figure out a way to Americanize the company under the law. You know, the national emergency declaration at the US-Mexico border, the withdrawal from the World Health Organization, withdrawal from the Paris Agreement. So much of the things that he has spoken about during the campaign and indeed after that. To me, it was really interesting because the speech, maybe because it was indoors, felt more like a State of the Union address than what we would sort of typically expect from an inaugural speech. But I guess what do we now expect from Trump 2.0? There's the view that he now sort of knows what he's walking into. I mean, the first Trump presidency and the way the White House was run was chaotic. I think even his most ardent supporters would agree with that classification of how the White House was run. Do you get the sense now, Rodney, that he kind of comes into it knowing what, I guess, being a president is like and with a very clear agenda of what he wants to achieve? Or is there a sort of a third way of looking at this that you can offer?
I think he comes into it with the experience of what he did and didn't do last time. He certainly, with this raft of executive actions, so it's a mixture of proclamations that don't have the same legal force as executive orders. So there's a lot of announcements. What I think is interesting, and it shows that he hasn't really learnt the game in my mind, is from day one, the world is better in America, according to Trump, in terms of how he's approached 2.0. There's none of this. We're going to set a course. We're going to take a number of decisions that are going to eventually get us to where we want to be. There's no expectation management on his part. There's just a series of big announcements, as if that suddenly changes everything for Americans. And all of a sudden, you know, it's not we're going to progress towards the golden age of America. It's already begun, and this is day one, and everything's already rosy in the garden. The first announcement on the White Office website, though, did set out the four pillars of what he wants to achieve: safe border, affordability on energy, government reform, and of course there's a hiring freeze at federal government level as one of the announcements on one of the executive orders, and then a return to US values, which is all the end of DEI and so on. So he has done what he said he was going to do. He's got about his task in a more efficient way, and he has made, you know, I mean, there's a whole series of announcements. I mean, even the initiation of the process to withdraw from the WHO is one of the early announcements as well. Obviously, government efficiency department and so on. But there's not anything yet on tariffs. Yes, there's American First in terms of foreign policy. I do think that some of the announcements that were made during the election campaign are inconsistent with some of the others, and particularly what has and hasn't got an adverse economic impact. And that's where we'll start to see some of those commitments unravel. I mean, the announcement in terms of the pardons for the January 6th people, it isn't a surprise, but in the same time, it's incredibly shocking, given that incident and so on. But these are all things we knew he was going to do. Yes, he's able to do them with the knowledge and experience previously, much earlier on. But does he have the ability to really change America and translate promises and ambitions and ideas that are sometimes inconsistent into action and impact? And I think we will, in the coming months, look at the announcements, but then start to evaluate performance on impact. And I'm sure that's what many Americans will be looking to do, though it all does feel very dramatic, and it's not that clear which is the most sensational of the early hours announcements, because there's lots of them to pour through.
Look, I think there are two very important points here that we need to consider. And Rodney's absolutely right. I think he's learned many lessons. He's certainly learned the lesson around the fact that he is going to now surround himself with what he considers a loyal people. That becomes the number
Yes.
one criteria.
Yeah.
And also, he's going to ensure that the machinery of government can work in line with what he wants to achieve. But he hasn't learned the fact that you cannot, you can't. Governing is very different to going up during the campaign on a platform and saying whatever comes to your head. Government is a very governing is a very different scenario, and I think there are some very, very strong headwinds that he needs to deal with. He said that he was going to sort out the Russia-Ukraine war in 24 hours, and then everyone says, "Oh, nobody took that seriously." No, but it may not be possible for him to do that, but it very much reflects on what he's all about. It's about headlines. He's trying to put it out there that today the golden age begins, etc. And he's very lucky because the economy in the US is on the way up. He's inheriting a very strong economy. He's going to be cutting a lot of ribbons that President Biden and the bipartisan infrastructure bill that he got through are going to kind of enable him to do. And I think there are many, many things that perhaps people who don't follow the US politics or don't really understand US politics all that well are ignoring here. And a great example of that is the latest court case challenging the Department of Government expenditure, for example. And that's going to slow things down. People like Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, these people are business people. They're not used to dealing with government processes. But at the end of the day, there's still a constitution in the US, and there are still courts, as much as the Supreme Court is stacked very much in favor of Trump and MAGA, etc. But there are still processes. And Biden, if you look at Biden, he was I think it was historic number of judges that he's appointed, and that was one of the smart strategic things that he did, amongst many not so smart strategic things. But there are courts in the country that are not stacked in favor of Trump, and he's going to find it very difficult to get a lot of the things that he wants done quickly without facing that one piece of document that was put forward and prepared a couple of hundred years ago by the founding fathers, the Constitution, which really is designed to limit the power of people like Trump. That's what it was designed to do, and it's going to be put to the test. And I think that he really has to overcome a lot of those challenges. I mean, things like birthright, for example. He's going around saying that he's going to get rid of birthright in the US. Well, that's in the Constitution. You need to change the Constitution. I mean, you can put an executive order in place, no problems. But the minute that goes to the Supreme Court, it's going to get overturned because the Supreme Court, as much as they're stacked against or in favor of Trump, still their number one job is to interpret and administer the Constitution and to protect the Constitution. And it's going to be pretty hard for any of those justices to go back from something like that. So yeah, I think he's got a lot of challenges. It's very easy to talk, but governing is a very, very different thing.
Do you know one other small point on it as well, Uzan, is he in one of his early executive orders, he revoked the last 17, but there's more that he's revoked of the Biden administration's time executive
Exactly.
orders.
Exactly.
But there were 17 made in the last 2 weeks that he's just automatically revoked. And Biden had the lowest number of executive orders since, I think, George Bush Senior. So they're well on their way to just unpicking everything that was put in place by the previous administration, again, as a clear signal of difference, but also to create space to do things very differently.
I find it interesting when we speak about whether he will be limited, though, Ozan, with obviously the Constitution, of course, trumps everything, right? Pardon the pun. But, between the three of us, we've worked in, enough sort of senior roles in corporates. You sort of know or even in levels of government. I mean, the higher up you get, yes, you may get a little bit more power and authority, but you're sort of more limited as well because, you know, you've got so many factors competing. You've got multiple internal stakeholders, external stakeholders, rules. Sure. You know, you do one decision here, it affects a decision over there. And sort of there's so many competing interests that you sort of need to take a decision on. And world leaders or leaders of countries, particularly in democratic ones, are sort of the same. Like it's, yeah, you can attempt to do X, but you need to also consider Y and Z, or you know, the whole alphabet really of factors that you need to do. I just get the feel that Trump doesn't have that. What's the word I'm looking for? Whether it's the care or the maybe even the understanding, and just being like, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. And it feels like this time, maybe it's because of the popularity of him on social media or the fact that he's extended his popular vote. It feels like there are much more people behind him than not, which would limit then those sort of the competing factors that I spoke about. When you look at who attended his inauguration, and we spoke about this a little bit, even the fact that, you know, sort of foreign leaders were invited as well, it feels like that this time round, there's a bigger wave of supporters which will get him through it. You know, get him through the things that he wants to do. I mean, when you look at, you know, for example, the TikTok ban that came in, you know, the timing was incredibly in TikTok's favor, where, you know, it happened where the legislation or the enforcement of the legislation needed to start the day before Trump was to take power. Trump made it very clear to the TikTok CEO, who's been at, you know, Mar-a-Lago and has been with him, and full disclaimer here, I used to work for TikTok and I did for 2 years. I no longer am employed by TikTok. But, you know, there was that sort of the dialogue between the TikTok CEO and Trump, which then allowed Trump to come out and say, I will put a, you know, a delay on the ban on TikTok, which meant it sort of went dark for about 6 hours in the US, which was a great PR move on its own, I think. But, you know, the court decided one thing. TikTok took it to the Supreme Court to say, you know, this is an impeachment of the First Amendment and the right to free speech. And the court said, well, no, it's not, because national security sort of, you know, overtakes that. And Trump came out and you know, sort of did it anyway, right? And there's a delay, and he'll try to find a political solution now, because he just happens to, although he wanted to ban it 4 years ago, he just now happens to support TikTok. Throwing the Zuckerbergs and the Murdochs and the Bezoses and everyone else of the world, to me, and again, this is very early observations, it feels like the support is going to outweigh, and again, I'm putting the Constitution to one side, because that's a little bit different, I think, you know, that's sort of a, you know, a different conversation. But I think overarchingly, we are going to see things that we didn't see last time, and things that are probably outside of what we would assume is the norm, only because this time I think he has more supporters than he did last time.
Adam, there is no, 100% agree with you. There is no doubt that there is a greater momentum behind his presidency this time around compared to 2016. There is no doubt about that. However, he still needs to be able to get his agenda across. Now, right now, there is absolutely nothing that the Democrats can do to prevent his agenda. However, for him, the real opponents or the opposition right now isn't the Democrats. It's that wide coalition, one, some may label it as an unholy alliance of people that he has brought together. And we're seeing early signs of massive fractures within that coalition and alliance. You look at the recent work visa issue around, you know, MAGA Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, etc., taking on MAGA. You know, you look at Steve Bannon, who's out to get Elon Musk, and you know, Elon Musk is super powerful, if not the most powerful communicator. But again, you can't underestimate someone like Steve Bannon, who has the ear of much of the base of the Trump coalition. And let's face it, there's, you know, there's about 3 months before most of the Congress goes out to raise money and to campaign for the midterms. They have a extremely slim margin in the Congress. So, you know, it's, whilst there is very little opposition to anything that Trump wants to get done, he's got a lot of work to do to get things through his own Congress. And, you know, and that's things like the budget. For example, the budget cuts that he brought in expire at the end of the year. He's got to try and bring them back in at the same time he's trying to cut the budget. And, all of these things are conflicting. This is what I mean by, he's a direct contrast to President Biden, who was basically missing in action for 4 years, did not communicate, and did the party and the cause great disservice. But what was he doing? He was governing, and he was trying to, he was more in the weeds and trying to work through the details of the Congress and the Senate governing, etc. Trump is the opposite. Trump wants to quickly get deals done. He's a deal man, and he wants to go around parading his achievements and the things that he wants to do, etc. But he's not interested in the detail. He's not in the weeds. The person that he's put up, I think, went to a recent meeting around some of the Ukraine-Russia things, I think, or the Israeli issue, and just said, look, the president-elect wants these things done. I don't care about details. I don't know much about this issue. At least he's honest. But just get it done. But this is not how governing works, and this is not how things work. People, you need people to get into the details, and you need people to work through those details, because with two or three spare or two or three kind of Congress members, that's your margin. It only takes two or three of them to say, I'm not supporting that. And, you know, then you have to spend months trying to negotiate with a bunch of people who, at the end of the day, of course, will be loyal to Trump, but are looking at saving their job in 2 years' time or 18 months' time when they have to face the people at the midterms. So it's not, I agree with you, there's a lot of momentum, but it just comes down to the fact that the system is not designed to be able to get things done very easily. And the opposition won't come from the Democrats, because I think the Democrats have done a woeful job of particularly since the election. And you raise the TikTok example, and that's a great example of how absolutely stupidity, an example of stupidity beyond words in terms of how to play these things politically. So the Democrats have got a long way to go before they are able to make an impact. But the opposition will come from within, and he's going to find it very difficult to juggle all of those competing interests.
But on the competing interest point, I mean, the TikTok for me is an example of where it's a single issue that isn't part of the broader vision and direction that he should be setting out early on in the administration. Now, there might be a timing issue because it needed to be done at a certain point in order to have the impact that's desired, you know, in terms of buying time or reversing this ban. But the growth in support, you know, as Trump goes from anti-establishment to establishment, and everyone forgets about the chaos of the previous administration and thinks, oh, it wasn't that bad, it means more supporters, but also means more PPOs, and more PPOs on these single issues that are often inconsistent then with the broad direction that he claims he wants to set out, which is where the type thing of the banning Musk on immigration visas, conflict arises, and these sort of issues will continue to arise and continue to cause problems. Where there's a direction that's been set out as the government direction to satisfy the MAGA base, and then there's the wealthy benefactors who have policy hobbies or projects that are inconsistent with that. And I think you're right, Ozan, we're going to see more of those points of conflict starting to come forward, and it's how that's managed by the administration that's going to be interesting, because achieving balance there or managing those points is going to be key to them having success.
One thing that I just want to add on that is that Trump is great in opposition because he's dealing with people who follow norms. Now he has to govern, and he has a Congress and Senate who are very much are not, and it's not filled with people who respect norms. So, you know, you've created this scenario where it's the wild, wild west. So I'm not sure, and I may be wrong, time will tell, but I'm not sure Trump is able to navigate through that, because he doesn't have the patience. He doesn't care. He's about headlines. He'll say something and then it'll, you know, and then the execution of it or the administration of what he says I don't think he could care less about, because he's got the headlines, he's got MAGA, they send an email, get more money from all of the MAGA diehards. This is his modus operandi. But he's created a scenario where if he wants to get a lot of these things done, he needs to find some sort of kind of, in the chaos that he's created, which is the Senate and the Congress with all those people, and all of the people he's brought into his inner circle, he needs to figure out a way of navigating that chaos. And I'm just not sure he's capable of it. He might have surrounded himself with people who are, and time will tell.
What about decline during the? Sorry, we're on this point. I mean, he is the oldest since Biden, following Biden to be elected. I mean, you know, the idea that he's going to be as sharp in 4 years as he is now, if it's right to call him sharp, and I'm sure there's many people who would think that he is, that's going to decline. So his ability to get things done may well be something which doesn't sustain during his term in office. Is that something that, you know, people should already be thinking about in terms of, you know, how much progress can be made at what stage? Because look at the remarkable decline that Biden took in terms of a downhill curve during his presidency.
I mean, I couldn't imagine having that job at this age, let alone in you know, 30 years' time. I mean, it's a very tough job. And if he wants to do it properly, which he has to do it properly if he wants to get the things that he's set out to do, if he wants to get them done, he has to do it. He has to spend a lot of time doing that job. And, you know, that I think a year in that job is probably the equivalent of 10 years in any other job. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that's something to look out for.
So what's his personal agenda here then? I mean, he is...
To keep out of jail.
I mean, to become president, to just do that, that would be really interesting. But, you know, You know, if we fast forward to you know, 2020, where do we get to? 2029. When he looks back, I mean, is it about, I guess, opening the path to a new generation of Republicans, of you know, businessmen? We see Vivek Ramaswamy, who obviously ran for the Republican primary, now, you know, announced that he'll be running for Ohio governor. You know, is it about opening the road and clearing roadblocks for these people to come in? We see people like, you know, influencers and broadcasters on social media like Charlie Kirk rise to prominence. Obviously, all the people that were at his inauguration. Is this the next generation of American leadership that will, or Republican leadership that will take over after Trump? And is this a personal agenda, or do you see something else? Because there was a lot of talk when he beat Clinton that, you know, he was sort of the accidental president, right? In the sense that, yeah, he campaigned, but I mean, he, you know, there's a prevailing view that he never really thought that he would actually win this time. I think, you know, very early on, the polls, particularly against Biden and then very quickly against Harris, showed that he was in for a real running, and we've already spoken about the momentum. What does he achieve in these 4 years that makes him go, tick, I did a good job?
He has been enormously successful in creating a movement that won't go away. And I think that that movement will continue in one form or another once he leaves politics. However, the question is that movement appealing to a broad part of the community? I think you could probably argue that it's not. And the reason for why I say that is when you look at people like J.D. Vance and Vivek Ramaswamy, etc., these people are, well, J.D. Vance is about as popular as the plague. And I think, and you saw that whenever Trump is not on the ballot, a lot of the Trump-esque MAGA types of people really don't do all that well. I think that's something that we need to keep in the back of our minds.
Yeah, look, I think he's created a movement. So look, when I look at the movement that he has created, I don't think that's the objective. He's not interested in a broader philosophical legacy. It's about the movement's a vehicle for personal success. I do think that he wants to make his mark as president. I know we talked about during the election campaign, his objective was to win, and there was a question mark on whether he'd really bother with anything afterwards. But I think there's something bigger in this golden age, and he wants to be the architect of the golden age, and I think he wants to be remembered for greatness. In terms of legacy and creating opportunities for others, I don't see it falls much outside his own family in terms of wealth and potential future political opportunity. I think it's still very much centered around Trump and his favoured family members, so that's not all of them, obviously, and to create opportunities for them. I don't think he really cares about whether Vivek succeeds politically as a result of the MAGA movement or Charlie Kirk or anyone else, frankly, for that matter. I do think it's very self-focused. I read one thing, I think it was yesterday or the day before, where he had shared with a confidant that he part of his ambition was to know whether he could be added to Mount Rushmore. And that probably, if true, sums up that type of very self-centered, self-focused legacy mindset.
And there's, I think, a big question mark around even if he did want to kind of help others and champion or facilitate a transition to people like Vivek or JD Vance or anybody else that's kind of up and coming in the MAGA movement. There's, I think, a big question mark around whether he can do it, because I think what, as if the Democrats continue in the way they're going and the way that they are behaving and their attitude towards things, there is a very high chance that the MAGA movement will only get stronger. However, that saying that, I think that if even a slight kind of pivot into the Democrats becoming a party that represent a broad coalition of people and are talking about the things that matter to people, even a slight pivot of that, I think, is enough to outweigh the unpopularity of MAGA in the broader community. So I think, because again, this whole mandate thing, he got 49% of the vote. About half of the country voted, and he got 49% of the vote. And yes, he won the swing states, he won fair and square, and he did a lot better than many people thought he would do. But he's only managed to secure three, four seats, margin in the Congress. The Senate map looks much tougher for the Republicans in 2026 midterms. Things could turn around very quickly, and I think one day is a long time in politics, let alone four. We could have a very, very different political environment in 4 years if the Democrats start to really understand what it is that they're doing wrong and try to do things to change that.
Let's look at the implications beyond the US and internationally. You've already mentioned, Ozan, that he said that he'd end the war in Ukraine. But one of the, I guess, the watchouts and where he's a real wild card is indeed what's happening in the Middle East. Now, of course, he did say about a week or so ago that, all hell would break loose in the Middle East if the hostages weren't returned, of course, referring to the hostages that Hamas was holding after its an attack on Israeli soil about 15 months ago now, which of course started that brutal, brutal war, which of course Trump has no baggage on, right? He hasn't aided Israel's current war. He hasn't, in many ways, as what I guess the Biden administration did, sort of, allowed this to continue to the level that it did. It didn't safeguard, some basic rights of the Palestinians, and there's been a lot of criticisms around that. And indeed, we've spoken about that at length on this podcast. What happens now in the Middle East? What role does Trump play in the ongoing war that Israel, I guess, has launched against, particularly the Gaza Strip, but the Palestinian people? And as well as, the retaliatory attacks and the ongoing ones by Hamas, what does Trump do? Does he work the Saudi card and use that to sort of, I guess, somehow find an agreement or a peace deal of sort? What happens, Rodney?
He'll continue to pursue the Abraham Accords because it's his, and that could provide context for one something positive to happen in Gaza and for the Palestinians within the context of Israel having closer relations with Saudi Arabia. So that's the trade-off. So it may be something which could be sold to Israel, which it wouldn't have been the case as a standalone issue. But in terms of a changing dynamic in terms of relations within the region and trade opening up and so on, at the same time as providing some security for the Palestinians, which would be obviously a win for the likes of the Gulf Arabs or the Saudis. And that could be the context. And because the Abraham Accords was a Trump initiative or administrative.
We should explain what the Abraham Accords are, maybe for those people who might have forgotten or don't know.
Yeah, so
I
under
think it's a
Trump's
very important point.
first presidency, he reached accommodation with the UAE, Israel, Bahrain, and one other, which will come to me in a second, in terms of opening up borders, embassies being in the other countries, establishment of relations which weren't anything other than incredibly cold and hostile prior to that, and overlaps in terms of cultural exchange and all these other areas to start to build up a level of movement and interaction between countries which before that had been, if not sworn enemies, incredibly frosty in terms of their relations and recognition of the state of Israel. Now that obviously made some progress, and then as things got hotter in Gaza and other areas, in terms of friction and Israeli action, military action within the region, it caused some tension in those relations, but they never terminated. So the platform of the Abraham Accords, which was really significant at the time, is still there. It'll provide opportunities for revisiting those types of agreements, and the West Bank, Gaza, potential for progress towards a Palestinian state there in terms of growing the relationship beyond the UAE and Bahrain, do include Saudi Arabia, which is obviously the huge prize for Israel. Now, the only other slight change, I say slight change, it's obviously a significant change, but factor which could be a slight difference. When the Abraham Accords were first signed, it was about focusing fire on Iran and bringing together the countries in the Middle East who had a common enemy with Iran. Iran has now moved closer to the Saudis and closer to the other Gulf Arabs as a consequence. And so the idea of the Abraham Accords being a device to bring Israel closer to its neighbors, with Iran being isolated as part of the outcome, well, that's now changed because Iran isn't any longer in that position. So how the US administration and Trump approach Iran is also now a different prospect in terms of selling an expansion of the Abraham Accords. But notwithstanding that, I still think that will be the vehicle which will be looked at to get Israel off the hook of what's going on in Gaza, as well as getting some positive for both Saudi Arabia and Israel.
Yeah, look, I think the policy objective will be to continue the platform of or the kind of set of treaties that he brought together under the Abraham Accords. However, I think there are probably some very smart people around him who understand the realities on the ground today, are probably advising him and saying this is going to be more difficult than it was in 2018, 19, 20, because the environment has changed. The you know at the time when the Abraham Accords were being put in place, Iran was a lot stronger. Israel had a lot more concerns about its security. Hezbollah was a bit of a bigger threat. Hamas was a bigger threat. Through the actions of Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel over the last 18 months, Hamas barely exists, and Hezbollah is has been weakened to the point of exist of existential threat, basically. I think that things are very different. Iran is very much weaker than it was back then. So the incentives, I think, will be very different for Trump. And I think, Rodney's absolutely right. Saudi Arabia will play a big role in this. And whether they mean it or not, I believe they have made it clear that they will not approach being part of the Abraham Accords unless the Palestinians have their own state. And we know that that's not possible in this environment at this point in time, with Netanyahu, who's obviously backed by some extreme far right, extremist, dangerous kind of parts of his coalition. They don't see that as a priority, a political priority. In fact, I think most of them probably see that this is not the time to foster relationships and build ties, we've got Iran where we want them, and we need to further weaken them, would be probably what they're thinking, which, you know, in my opinion, is just going to cause further suffering and further destabilization of the region. We've got a ceasefire in place, which should have happened a long time ago, but that doesn't mean that it's the end of the conflict in Gaza. And I think Netanyahu has very, very different opinions on how to move forward. And Trump is going to struggle to keep the interests of Saudi on one hand, and the demands and desires of most of that region, as well as keeping Netanyahu under control. And it will be very interesting to see what happens. I think if Netanyahu ignores Trump, I think, you know, again, Biden was a norms person. He was always of the view that Israel, whatever they did, and they did a lot of bad things in the past 6 months, you know, would unconditionally receive US support. I'm not sure Trump would have that level of commitment if Netanyahu was to kind of cross him or not do what as Trump desires. I mean, they have a pretty shaky past. I think it was Netanyahu that was one of the people who accepted the outcome of the 2020 election, and I don't think Trump's ever forgiven him for that. So that's going to be very interesting to see. I think, again, coming back to his domestic problems, the things that he needs to sort out internationally are not that easy to sort out, and I think he's going to find that very quickly. So he's going to have to rely on a bunch of things that just get quick headlines, because at the end of the day, he has to look like he's the man who has come in and fixed everything. And whilst he might have some band-aid measures that he puts on these things, he will sell them as fixes. But for anybody, for the people who know a lot more than me about that region, they will be the first ones to tell you that if you want long-term stability and peace in that region, there are a whole bunch of things that you need to do, which at this point in time look very difficult for Trump to handle.
Yeah, it's just very, very Trump, isn't it? Where he'll say something that you think, well, this could either be a policy position or it could be a momentary distraction, and who knows? And people like us are sitting there trying to deconstruct what it means. And, well, I think, strap in, gents, it's going to be a very, very interesting 4 years, a very good time to be doing a podcast looking at what's happening around the world. Before we go, Ozan, though, one person that I never thought we'd be speaking about on this podcast, to be honest, made headlines that caught your attention over the last week. Brad Pitt, tell us what happened there.
Yeah, look, I mean, I always had high hopes that we would talk in great detail about Brad Pitt, so I can't say I agree with you on that. But it appears that Brad Pitt has kind of, in some ways, indirectly been involved in scamming a lady who, for the past 18 months or 2 years, believed that she was in a genuine relationship with Brad Pitt. And the Daily Mail, of course, this is a story from the Daily Mail, it has to be, has had extensive reporting on this. And if it's not really made for kind of audio format, so I would encourage those listening to go and check out the article. But this lady apparently felt that she was helping who she thought was Brad Pitt with all of the difficulties that he was facing. Some of those difficulties were financial troubles. Of course, you know, when someone comes to me pretending to be Brad Pitt and tells me that they need money for things like surgery and paying their mortgage, you know, I automatically believe that without questioning it. But yeah, it's truly bizarre. There are photos on there on that Daily Mail article that show Brad Pitt going in for medical treatment. And whoever's done this, I have to give it to them. They really haven't spent much time trying to make it look real. And the poor lady who's fallen for it, I'm not sure you could say poor, but yeah, she's really fallen for it, and yeah, you've got to wonder what was going through her mind, because I tell you, some of those photos, I have zero skills in Photoshop, but I could have done better to portray myself in different scenarios as Brad Pitt. So anyway, I think it's a very interesting story, and goes to show that there are still good people out there who believe things unconditionally, much to their kind of financial detriment. I believe she lost 700,000 euros in assistance that she provided to Brad Pitt, who seemed to be in all sorts of financial bother.
Yeah, I mean, my only observation on that is that the headline said it was AI assisted, and if that's the best that AI can achieve in terms of supporting a scam, given how ridiculous some of the photos look, maybe AI isn't going to be the next big thing.
We have a long way to go, I think, with AI. I mean, look, to her credit, though, I mean, the one thing that I've been told to be able to kind of differentiate a real photo and AI photo is you've got to always look at the hands. The hands always look really bad on an AI generated photo. And this scammer was I think very smart. Didn't have photos of hands. Just had a really bad few photos of you know Brad Pitt having an operation and doing all sorts of wonderful things to demonstrate his love for this poor woman.
Well, if we thought 2024 was a weird and wonderful year, I tell you what, this year's off to a cracker. Gents, I wouldn't be in the trenches with anyone else. It's been a real pleasure to kick off 2025. Thanks for your time this week. See you next.
Absolutely. Pleasure. Thanks.
And that's been this week's episode of Put Simply. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn at Oroka Group to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and news. Feel free to leave a comment and suggestions on what you'd like to see featured on the podcast as well. Until next time, I'm Erdem Koch.
And I'm Ozan Ibrahim.
Thanks for listening.